The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the histories of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about 1 hour or so, and we assure you that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement anytime. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website and to be identified by the name as the person who was interviewed. So do I have your consent to continue?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. In what churches or other religious organizations have you participated?
In Kansas?
Sure. Or really wherever.
This is the only church I've been affiliated with in Kansas. Okay. Marion Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
Before that, I was with Grandview Presbyterian Church in Glendale, California.
Okay.
As a youth director.
Okay.
And in Spokane at Millwood Community Presbyterian Church, okay. Spokane, Washington,
okay.
as a youth director, and then in Tucson at St. Andrew's Presbyterian wow. Church
okay.
as a volunteer.
So. That's cool.
Yeah.
So can you tell us anything about the founding and early days of the organization?
Of this particular church?
Or of Presbyterian, I guess. You're the first person that I've interviewed of this denomination.
Oh, wow. So. I didn't do my research for the history of the denomination. I'm prepared to talk about
that's
that.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I can tell you how this church...
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
In the late 1860s, people made their way to Marion. And around 1870, they wanted to start a church.
Okay.
And the one of the starting people of it was, I think, Alex Case.
Okay.
Who was related to yeah. the Case family mm-hmm. here in town. And he was an insurance salesman, but was affiliated with the Presbyterian Church, I think, back east in Pennsylvania. Okay. And so he started they built a building for Sunday school. The first Sunday of worship, there was a huge thunderstorm the night before. And the legend goes that they had to cross a swollen creek on a fallen limb, okay. fallen tree, to okay. get to the building, and okay. they had Sunday school. 1871, they built the sanctuary we have here.
Okay.
And it was just the sanctuary. During the Depression, they dug the basement.
Okay.
Which was a formidable task. And yeah. then in the 1980s, they built this wing, the Fellowship Hall.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Why were people, or why are people attracted to this religious body?
As far as this congregation goes, I think they're attracted to it because it is a really welcoming congregation. Mm-hmm. And they look outside of the building to reach out, I think, to the community. The denomination as a whole, I think people come to the denomination. In the 60s, they came to the denomination because it was a denomination for people of achievement and success. If you were wealthy or if you were accomplished intellectually, mm-hmm. you usually were Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm.
That changed in the 80s. People started leaving the denomination. So I think now people come to it because it's a place that's welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
Most churches are, I think. But I think like any other denomination, mainline denomination, you're going to find that each church is different and they don't represent the denomination
yeah.
as a whole real well.
Mm-hmm.
But the Presbyterian denomination seems to be a denomination that is flexible, that has room for people to come in and figure out what they believe, but also has room for people who are firm in what they believe
mm-hmm.
to worship. So.
How did you come to be involved in it?
Oh, I was baptized into the United Church of Christ. Have you talked to anybody in that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I was baptized in the United Church of Christ as an infant in Tucson, and my parents attended a church that was on the opposite side of town from their house.
Okay.
And we started getting older, my brother and I, and they wanted to get us involved in a church that was closer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Baptist church right next to our house, and they didn't want to go to the Baptist church. So they went, they found this Presbyterian church with a good kids program. And
okay.
so probably from early elementary school on, I was involved in the Presbyterian Church and just was raised in that and got to be part of the youth group and volunteer with mm-hmm. youth leadership and stuff like that. So that's what made it happen for me.
So would you say that you would have like a predisposition for a religious organization of this type? Just being raised by your parents who were members, or?
I think that would be the predisposition. I think now, I think that was a predisposition. Mm-hmm. I felt like I should go into the ministry in the Presbyterian Church because mm-hmm. that's what raised me mm-hmm. in the faith. I would say now, where I'm at now, I'm very content in this particular church. Mm-hmm. But if I were looking to be in another church, it might not be a Presbyterian church.
Okay. So as far as, like, the denomination, do you guys have a conference that kind of, because I know I'm a Methodist, right. So we have the conference that tells, you know, our pastors where they have to go, that kind of thing. Do you guys have that, or?
We don't.
Okay.
It would be like if you went out and applied for a job.
Okay.
And there was a hiring group, and they interview you, and they interview a bunch of different people, and they limit it down to a couple people, okay. and those people come and interview in person. Our denomination has what I call a matchmaking service.
Okay.
And pastors fill out forms, and then churches fill out forms, and they kind of compile where those things match up. And then those churches receive the pastor's forms.
Okay.
And then they can contact those pastors and get interviews with them.
Okay. So it's more of a kind of a personal type thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are daily experiences in the religious body like?
In this one, I'm usually in my office in the mornings, Tuesday through Friday. I get downtown for coffee with the guys mm-hmm. just to find out what's going on in their lives, keep tabs of what's going on in town. I have a lot of meetings throughout the month. I have meetings here at the church and then mm-hmm. meetings at the presbytery level. I'm the chair of a camp committee, so mm-hmm. I meet with them, and I am on a task force that's in a hiring process for the presbytery, so we meet with them. And sometimes those meetings are a couple times a month, depending on what's going on. We just got done building a chapel down in southeastern Kansas.
Oh, cool.
That was a $450,000 project, so was like meetings twice a mm-hmm. month with the committee and with builders and mm-hmm. stuff. It was a big project. I also meet with a group of pastors just to socialize mm-hmm. and to be that are friendly and you know, relax. And,
mm-hmm.
and so we meet once a month, and the Ministerial Alliance here in town mm-hmm. meets once a month. And then there's a couple meetings in the church that happen throughout the month. So it seems like there's a lot of meetings. Some, mm-hmm. some months I'm just tired of meetings. But I do hospital visitations. Mm-hmm. I've been in the prison a couple times to see people who have been imprisoned. Get into the community here, particularly visiting the elderly people from mm-hmm. our church and just checking in and seeing how they're doing, because just making sure they're not lonely, that mm-hmm. they've got things to do. Mm-hmm. So,
have you been, I know that you said that you like were participating in other Presbyterian churches in probably bigger cities, I would assume. Is that the same kind of thing? Or is it, do you feel it's a little more laid back since Marion's so small? Or?
I'd say this is more laid back. I'd also say I get to do more things in a smaller church.
Mm-hmm.
In bigger churches, you get assigned an area.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when I was doing youth ministry, I did youth ministry, mm-hmm. and there was very little that was done with any other part of the mm-hmm. church. There wasn't much preaching, there wasn't much leading worship, but I did a lot of youth ministry and going to camps and weekly things and events and mission trips. And
so a lot less community stuff than...
Yeah.
Okay. So Marion's kind of an advantage.
You I think
meet
so.
More people. And
yeah, and I think the pastors here can be pastors to the community.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a business yesterday and was able to talk with the owner about some of the stuff that's going on and,
mm-hmm.
and just be a listening ear for her. And she doesn't go to my church. I don't think she goes to anybody's church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think the pastors here have an opportunity mm-hmm. to do that that you don't necessarily get in a bigger city setting. Yeah.
How did your membership or participation affect your own private life outside the religious group?
When I was looking to come here, my grandfather was raised in a small town. He said mm-hmm. the best thing about a small town is that, they said the worst thing about a small town is everybody knows your business. And he said, but the best thing about a small town is everybody knows your business. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a blessing here, because mm-hmm. We've gone through some things, and people have helped us when we needed help. Mm-hmm. When my wife's father died, we couldn't afford to get up for the service, and people contributed money mm-hmm. to help us get up there.
That's awesome.
So that's been a real advantage. Mm-hmm. There's times where I need to just get the heck out of town. A couple summers ago, we had two deaths within 24 hours. Both of them were unexpected. And I couldn't go anywhere without people asking mm-hmm. me how so-and-so was doing mm-hmm. or how the family was mm-hmm. doing. It was like, I just need to get out. And so loaded up the family and went mm-hmm. to Wichita for mm-hmm. dinner, you know, and just got the heck out of mm-hmm. here for a little bit. So most of the time it's really good, but sometimes mm-hmm. I just need to get out of town and
It's definitely a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Living in a tiny town.
Right.
Let's see. What kind of practices were or are involved in the group? Like rituals and ceremonies?
We do communion once a month, usually on the first Sunday of the month, mm-hmm. with the exception of December, when it's on Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. and the month that Ash Wednesday falls, and usually February it'll be on Ash Wednesday mm-hmm. instead of on the first Sunday of the month. We baptize infants up to adults. Most of the baptisms I've done here have been for people under the age of 10. I think we've done one baptism for a young adult who's like 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. There's women's Bible study here once a week. There's a men's Bible study that meets once a week in the mornings, and then another one that meets once a month in the evenings.
You just have one service.
Just one service. Okay. Worship in the mornings on Sundays at 9:30 with a praise band and a choir. We have a great organist. I'm trying to think. Christian education following worship each Sunday for all ages. So that's from the nursery up to mm-hmm. adults. That's optional. And those are the regular things that mm-hmm. go on here. We do an annual church retreat to a camp once a year, which we get about half the congregation goes on.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you guys do any other outings like that? I know Eastmore, they do like hayrack rides, that kind of stuff. Do you guys do things like that?
Yeah, we do a hayrack ride, and we do caroling, mm-hmm. and we do, we've done a program called Who's Coming to Dinner, where a few people host, and then eight people go there, get assigned there for dinner, so you get to meet new people in the church. what else have we done? We did the trip, the retreat. Seems like there's more. I'm sure there is.
Do you guys do anything as far as, like, for the Advent season? Do you guys do... My church up in Lawrence, they do a come-and-go communion. So I don't know if you guys did anything over Advent or...
No, not just the candles. Not throughout the Advent. We do the candles on Sunday mm-hmm. morning with different readers, and we mm-hmm. do a children's program. Our church hosts a Vespers service during December, which is a choir made up of people from the community, mm-hmm. but we host it at our church.
Okay.
The community does a Lenten. Started last year doing a Lenten breakfast.
Oh, okay.
So once a month, different churches would host the breakfast, and the Ministerial Alliance would support it.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was really neat. And then that falls with a Good Friday community, mm-hmm. Good Friday service. I think that's about it. That covers those.
Okay. How did the people relate to each other? What kinds of activities were found in the group?
Oh, I think the people... It's interesting in a small town. Sometimes you take it for granted that people already know each other, and then you mm-hmm. find out that they don't, mm-hmm. even though they sit two pews away every mm-hmm. Sunday. But their lives never intersect, and so you have to give them those avenues, like who's coming to dinner or mm-hmm. different activities where they can meet each other. Mm-hmm. Then other times, you just... go downtown and you'll see two people that you didn't know were friends talking to mm-hmm. each other from the church, and mm-hmm. you realize that some of that small town stuff makes it possible for them to get to know each
other.
That's
cool.
Yeah,
I like who's coming to dinner. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's worked really well for us. Mm-hmm. And then also, I try and make sure during fellowship time, I think, and I don't know if you've run into this talking to other people, but the fellowship time in churches can be what's supposed to be the most communal can be some of the mm-hmm. most isolating, because mm-hmm. you go to the people that you already know. Mm-hmm. And so I make sure to go and talk to people who mm-hmm. haven't been here before, who've only been here a few times, and try and get them to bridge with other people who've mm-hmm. been here before by introducing them. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. How did members of the religious group interact with other members of the general public?
I'd say fairly well. I think there's always going to be, in a small town, there's going to be some religious animosity mm-hmm. towards the other churches. Mm-hmm. But I think especially the Ministry Alliance has a good relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that set a tone for the members of the churches to have a good relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I think, for the most part, our church does a good job relating. It's interesting because our church is also, I would say, primarily Methodist. Mm-hmm. It's people that were raised Methodist mm-hmm. or at one point were in the Methodist church mm-hmm. and have come to the Presbyterian church. But also we've got people that were raised Catholic and Lutheran mm-hmm. and Quaker and Mennonite and Presbyterian and United Church of Christ. So that makes it possible. And Baptist. So you got all these people from all these different backgrounds mm-hmm. makes it easier to relate to people who are in those other mm-hmm. churches.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did food figure into your religious life?
I would say, yeah. Every Sunday we have fellowship time mm-hmm. and people sign up for a Sunday to be the people who host that. Mm-hmm. And so they provide all the snacks for that. And then there's your congregational meetings where you have potlucks mm-hmm. and different things like that. Our monthly men's Bible study has a dinner and then mm-hmm. Bible study, and mm-hmm. I think most of the men come for the dinner. So,
have you seen that in all the churches that you've interacted in?
Yeah, I
have.
Kind of potlucks. Yeah, yeah. Those meals are important, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be a potluck. Even just bringing in pizza food, or something, yeah. just having food there food. makes it good for people to gather mm-hmm. around.
Was volunteer labor used for any part of the life of the group, such as like maintenance or?
Oh yeah. I'm the only full-time staff at this church, and okay. so you've got a couple people that work as a custodian and as a groundskeeper, mm-hmm. But then you've got people, like a couple months ago, the bell wasn't ringing, and so one of the people in the church climbed up there and took care of it and figured out the problem and got it down and was able to get somebody else to repair wow. it from the church and got it back up there, and so that's the kind of stuff mm-hmm. this church fully operates on, the understanding that volunteers are going to doing a lot of the work.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Which has been really neat to see. Mm-hmm. So other churches I've been at, they just hire staff to do that mm-hmm. kind of work.
So I think that's probably more prevalent in bigger churches yeah. where they can afford,
right?
You know, just to pay more people.
Yeah.
What were the economic arrangements of the group, and how's money raised? That type of stuff.
I'd say this is a well-established congregation mm-hmm. financially. Money is collected each week in offering, and that's the money that supports the mission of the church. Church of this size doesn't normally have a full-time pastor, so that mm-hmm. tells you that's a very generous church. Mm-hmm. They've done a couple billing campaigns when they built this wing of the church. They had to raise money for it.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know the exact history, but it was something like on a 10-year loan, they had it paid off in 6 years or something. Okay. So they don't operate in debt for long. Mm-hmm. They want to have things paid off mm-hmm. and taken care of and in order. So in the last year when the economy was in a downturn, mm-hmm. this church operated in a surplus on the budget for the entire year, which was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to help out families outside of this church, just in the county, who needed help mm-hmm. to get on their feet. We were able to give money to the food bank and things
That's
like
awesome.
That. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So is there a church council that makes its spending decisions? That
yes.
Kind of stuff? Okay.
The session meets once a month. They're called the session. It's the body of active elders. Mm-hmm. We have 7 elders and myself and a clerk of session.
Okay.
So that's the makeup of mm-hmm. that, and they are also the trustees for the church.
Okay.
A lot of Presbyterian churches will have a board of trustees, a session, and a board of deacons.
Mm-hmm.
The deacons do a lot of the ministry, okay. hands-on stuff mm-hmm. for the church. The session will make the operating decisions, and mm-hmm. the trustees would make the financial decisions. Being a small church, mm-hmm. that's all in one group.
Okay. Okay. So who owns the group's property? The church, or...?
Technically, the denomination owns the property. Okay. So, the PC, Presbyterian Church USA, which is what we belong to, technically owns the property that the mm-hmm. church is on. But there's, throughout the nation, there's some legal battles going on between churches and the denomination okay. on that issue.
Okay. So does the, do you live in a parsonage?
No.
Does the church have that? Okay.
No, I bought my house.
Okay.
The church used to have a parsonage okay. about 30 years ago and okay. sold it.
Okay. So the church doesn't own any, like, real estate or buildings uh-huh. or they have nope. vehicles?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Nope. Okay. Were there rules of agreements regarding dress or other matters of style?
There haven't been. They okay. allow me to be pretty flexible.
Okay.
In the summer, I've been known to show up in shorts and flip-flops.
Okay.
I wear a suit on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. That's what some of our older people are used to. Mm-hmm. They've never told me I have to wear a suit.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to, during the week, I want to make sure that people know that I'm not somebody set apart from the rest of the mm-hmm. population. I like to wear tennis shoes and jeans, and I like mm-hmm. to wear flip-flops in the summer, and I like to be part of the regular community,
mm-hmm.
and I want to make sure that that's known.
Mm-hmm.
So that
I think that's probably easier in a smaller community.
Yeah, it is.
So when I see my pastor out, I'm like up in Lawrence, like, whoa, what are you doing? What were the people like? Were there any unforgettable characters here in church or in past churches that you've been in?
Oh, there's always some of those. One of the churches I worked in had a woman that the fellowship hall was tiled.
Mm-hmm.
And when the youth group used the fellowship hall on Wednesday night, she would go in on Thursday morning and count how many scuff marks were on the tile. And then file a complaint with the buildings and grounds person. And I'd say at every church I've been at, there's been somebody like that. This church has been real good in that there's not somebody
mm-hmm.
exactly like that. Mm-hmm. But there's always going to be people who have it in mind that things need to be done a certain way
mm-hmm.
and used a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to gently break that mold and help them see things another yeah. way. There's been some real pillars of the faith in these churches who just have been through a lot. Regardless of what they're going through, they can stand on the rock of Jesus Christ and know that they're assured in their life. Mm-hmm. And that's always a blessing
mm-hmm.
to have that. I can think of somebody like that at every church I've been at. So each church has the good and the bad,
mm-hmm.
even small churches mm-hmm. and big churches. And What I learned going into ministry, I learned from a retired minister who's now passed, but when he was a new minister, his dad was on the phone with him. His dad was a minister, and his dad told him, your job is to preach the word and love the people. And that stuck with him, and that sticks with me, that
mm-hmm.
regardless of whether somebody's stuck in their ways mm-hmm. or if they're excited about what's going on, mm-hmm. you need to love each one of them, so...
How are children handled?
Oh, I'm not sure how they were handled before I got here.
Okay.
We moved here with a 5-month-old,
mm-hmm.
and I just basically told the church that we're going to welcome kids in the sanctuary, and I had a professor in seminary that said we shouldn't be surprised that young adults don't come to church. He said for 18 years we tell them that they're not welcome in church, and then when they turn 18 we expect them to show up.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, they need to be in church. They need to be comfortable in the sanctuary and
mm-hmm.
whatever. So the 5 years I've been here, we've seen the number of children grow
mm-hmm.
and the noise in the sanctuary rise. And for me, that's fine on mm-hmm. a Sunday morning. I had an elder in the church tell me one time that if the kids are making noise during the sermon, then they're not listening. The adults aren't listening to me. They're distracted. And I told the elder, I said, my honest hope is that your most spiritual event doesn't happen on Sunday morning, mm-hmm. but that it happens during the week outside of the church.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because I can't provide your most spiritual moment every week. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that was a learning experience. And so this church really handles kids well. They're learning how to do Christian education. Mm-hmm. That's something that we're still learning. And I think as a culture, we're having to adapt to. We've got a lot of blended families, so mm-hmm. kids are here one weekend, but not the next. Mm-hmm. Our kids are in sports on Sunday, and mm-hmm. I grew up as a kid on sports on Sunday, so I can't get really bent out of shape about that. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to learn how to adapt, and that might mean doing it a different night of the mm-hmm. week or something when kids are with their families mm-hmm. that they're with each week. Mm-hmm. So it's a learning experience, but I think the church is really growing.
So you guys don't have any sort of programs like a children's church or anything like that where they are excused from the service?
No, not during worship. There's an attendant in the nursery, so parents can bring their young mm-hmm. kids there if they want to. Mm-hmm. But mostly kids stay in the sanctuary and draw and color and make noise and talk to their parents. And I did a whole Easter Sunday with my daughter at the pulpit with me.
Really? So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So, like you said, there are educational programs for adults apart from regular worship services. You talked about that.
Right.
And what kinds of art forms are present? Visual symbols, musicals.
Lots of music. The church has a great organist, a great organ. The praise band plays every other week except for Advent, during mm-hmm. the weeks of Advent, because mm-hmm. we have a giant Christmas tree that goes where the mm-hmm. praise band is. So we don't do it then, but we also try and squeeze in all those carols that you can only sing once a year.
Yeah.
There's a series of banners that have been donated to the church by a woman out of Kansas City whose daughter goes here. And so we've got these great, big, beautiful banners that mm-hmm. hang under the cross. We have a woman in the church that does pottery, and so we use some of that pottery for communion.
That's cool.
There's a group of women that get together and sew about mm-hmm. once a month here in the church. They call it Scrap and Sew, and they can do different artwork and talk.
That's cool.
And fellowship together.
Do you have any sort of like presentations or like PowerPoint type stuff that do you guys have like a projector?
We don't have a projector and a screen yet. I think that's something that we'll investigate down the road. Mm-hmm. But the way the church is set up, it's not really designed mm-hmm. for it, so it would take some out of the box thinking to figure out how to do that.
Okay. Are there any treatment programs for drug or alcohol abuse or physical or mental abuse?
Not here at our church. We refer people to AA, which is done through the St. Luke Clinic.
Okay.
And for physical abuse, we usually refer them to Prairie View because mm-hmm. they can handle that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't think of anything else that I have. Here's one. I don't know if you'll want to answer it or not. What kinds of norms and or expectations were there for sexual behavior?
Oh, I don't know if there were. I don't know.
Is that something that you guys discuss, or?
It seems to be an explosive topic mm-hmm. in churches. I've addressed it a couple times in the best way that I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's been received well. But with the understanding that we're all sinners saved by grace,
mm-hmm.
and that whatever the sins are in my life, they're not any less worse or more worse mm-hmm. than somebody else's sins.
Yeah.
So issues of homosexuality or sex outside of marriage or adultery, those things I think have been handled with grace in this congregation. We have a lot of people who've been divorced and are remarried.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of grace involved mm-hmm. in those topics. I don't think church is a place where people need to come and feel miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also a place where people can come and see what the sins are in their life
mm-hmm.
and respond to them
mm-hmm.
and have their life changed by the Holy Spirit. I regularly tell this congregation that it's not their job to save someone, that that's Jesus' job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not their job to convict somebody else's sin, that that's mm-hmm. the Holy Spirit's job. So our job is to love people,
mm-hmm.
regardless of where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's been handled with a lot of grace.
So do you see this church and congregation as being very accepting that if someone were to come in?
I think it would push the boundaries for them.
Okay.
Say
like homosexuality, that type of thing. So you don't see it very often here in Marion, obviously, because it's tiny. But
there's a couple in town that has talked about coming here, and I've invited them here, and for whatever reason they haven't shown up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a segment of the church would be very welcoming. Mm-hmm. I think another segment of the church would be pushed to the edge of their comfort mm-hmm. zone.
I think you'll probably find that wherever, then,
yeah.
really.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think this church is out soliciting
mm-hmm.
homosexual couples to come in. I don't think they're out soliciting adulterers to come in.
Mm-hmm.
I think when those people do come in, I think they'll find that, by and large, this church is going to welcome them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's awesome. So how do you see the future of the group over the long haul? Do you see it growing or
changing? Yeah, I do see it growing. We've had a lot of growth just in the last year. After I've been here 5 years now. This is when I first moved here. People said, "Well, is it a church that wants to grow?" And I said, "Well, they haven't added on to their sanctuary since
mm-hmm.
1871."
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that tells you something
mm-hmm.
that the sanctuary has remained the same size for mm-hmm. 140 years. They're probably not looking necessarily mm-hmm. to become a mega church or
mm-hmm.
even a church of a couple hundred, but they are growing.
Mm-hmm.
My main hope, and I'm seeing it come to fruition, is that they would become a church that thinks outside of the walls of this church.
Mm-hmm.
And they have. And we've done some good mission work this last year. We're planning a mission trip to Haiti in 2012.
That's awesome.
So it's still a year and a half away, but it's on the books, and
mm-hmm.
people are looking towards that. So I think there's going to be growth. I'd like to see more kids involved and see the adults take more ownership in the
mm-hmm.
the kids in the church.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we've lost. I can speak to it. I mean, we don't live near any of our grandparents,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of families are that way. They mm-hmm. don't necessarily live near grandparents. So I'd like to see the older people in the church step in and look after some of the young families
mm-hmm.
and young kids in the church so that they can build those relationships.
That's cool. Well, I don't think I have any other questions.
All right.
So thank you so much for getting with me.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah. I will stop.